Makoto, welcome to South Pacific Muscle. We're just fucking really sitting around watching Mike eat his food there. You're quite happy there? Yeah.
You've been watching too much of Forward, mate.
Yeah. They're good, though. I like how they roll in just real casual and, you know, it is what it is because, you know.
Well, got to get our meals in, man.
Absolutely, bro. I've got to say, if it came down to doing a podcast, training or reading, you know what the priority is.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
So feel free.
I should get her to bring me my food, just like Yannicka does for James and just like Denise does for Ben Chow, you know. But I am Fuad, you know, we've been married too long.
I cooked it.
For once.
Let's not have a domestic online. Welcome.
Recording for a second there.
Yeah, I saw that. No. Hey, good to have you on board, Darren. How are you tonight?
Yeah, good, bro. Good to be back. How are you guys?
Cool, man. Cool. I hear you're heading my way tomorrow by some.
Yeah, my supplement sponsors, Razies, are up there. So I think Daryl and I, who's also sponsored by them, are going to go up tomorrow and have a catch up with them. And then I think we're going to train something somewhere, are we?
I don't know, bro. I've got a pretty crazy day, but we'll talk afterwards. But I must meet Kane at some stage because all of my crew and all of my friends go, you know, Kane, don't you, from Razies? And I'm like, no, I've never met him. So, you know, he seems to know everyone that I know. So at some point I'll need to bump into him and say hi. So tell him it's on the agenda.
You guys can make a training video tomorrow. Have you got a videographer that can go with you?
I'm pretty useless with videos and cameras and stuff. Eh? I can't even figure out how to get this to turn my phone around and stay this way.
No, look, I don't know, bro. I'm pretty beat up, actually, to be honest. I've had, like, tingling in my toes for, like, 7 days now. And one side's a bit sciatic-y and, yeah, results of heavy RDLs and a loud popping noise on one rep. So I think I might leave the training to you guys, but I'll definitely catch up for a coffee or something. So we'll talk after this. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
Hey, tonight we kind of loosely discussed a bit of an agenda that we wanted to have a bit of a conversation about advice that we wish we'd had when we started. So what I thought we'd do, and rather than letting you guys know in advance, I just thought I'd spring it on you, but if we could kind of go through, you know, like from a training, then move on to nutrition, et cetera, competing, whatever it is, and each give one bit of advice that I guess a novice to intermediate lifter bodybuilder could take away and do something with. So seeing as I like being kind to our guests, I'm going to go for you, Mike, and go, should we talk training? And do you want to give you one bit of advice that you've prepared for?
I'm going to jump back for a second, actually. And a bit of advice, a bit of knowledge I've just gained over the last few years. I was a lot of knee problems. I was taking a lot of Cyclophilic, a lot of Voltaren. I had knee surgery and it was always swollen just to do that to get through squats. And actually back then I was still trying to run. And it was only way too late I realized it actually negatively impacted on recovery. It's quite bad for your training. And so I laid off them and just kind of, you know, did what I could to manage pain in bits and pieces. And then I've been really structured and really disciplined. Everything's very, very kind of systematic and everything's pretty similar. I had really sore shoulders, took some more, took another couple of, gained 2 kilos just of water in 2 days and then dropped it off again. So I never realized it sort of had those sort of impacts, significant impacts on your body until recently. And I've been at it for, you know, 20, 30 years. I was popping a lot of lollies at times, you know. And how's that negatively impacted on my recovery and gains?
Yeah, it's a sodium compound, so it makes sense that it makes your whole fluid, although, you know, it's anti-inflammatory in nature. But, interesting. I'm very much like you now, very cautious about them. I don't like masking an injury. And at the same time, I'm aware they're pretty hard on your kidneys and things as well. So, I kind of use them like internal ice, you know, like straight after an injury if I have something acute. I'll whip down a Voltaren and that'll be it. And then from then on in, she's about, you know.
That's what made me think of it, you know, with your RDL. Did you take anything with that?
The only thing I really took was some I ended up going and buying some Nurofen today to get through training, which I shouldn't have done, but, you know, hey, this is what it is. Got a back work at him, but just trying to free up the joint in that, so like it was useful to sort of take away a bit of that inflammation, but not something I'm gonna, you know, I don't like masking those injuries, and I think it's very detrimental to your progress to hide an injury and then try and train through it.
Jamie's gotten you on quite a good list of ancillaries, isn't he? Has he got some curcumin or something for that? Yeah. Natural anti-inflammatory? So
yeah, along with fish oils, etc. as well. But
yeah.
Right. So we're going to go back to training, Mike. What's your one bit of advice that you'd give to a novice or intermediate bodybuilder to try and get the most bang for their buck in terms of training?
This is something I was reasonably good at once I really got serious, but be systematic. Everything you do, your body is your own science experiment. So you record everything, you measure everything, you test everything. You know, does this work? How well does it work? What works better? What works differently? You can only do that by gathering information. You know, keeping training logs, keeping measurements, keeping it. Like, I mean, I was essentially trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. I've got the worst genetics in the world. I was a long distance road cyclist. Right? But for whatever reason, decided I wanted to be a bodybuilder. So I had to squeeze every little bit of it, everything that I did. And so I did that by trying to make sure I optimized it. And I didn't always get it right, but I did. When I train people, especially early on, hey, look, I don't have all the answers. We will make mistakes, but we're not going to make the same mistake twice. You know, make sure we learn from everything we do. So I see you as doing that by being very systematic with everything you do. Every other sort of little technique just hangs on top of that. You try this, you try the other thing, but do they work or doesn't it work?
Cool, man. That's fucking really good. I wouldn't have thought of that. That's a really good one. Something that some people inherently do and others have to kind of, you know, force themselves to start writing a logbook. And then as time goes on, you sort of pick up more and more detail in it.
Information you can put in it. I remember going through some of my old competition logs and things, and I'd still do security, and I'd work late at night, and I'd 2 days later, I'd be having a shit workout, and I started to see the patterns for me. And it was actually taking a couple of days till I'd have the shit workout, and that was the effect of the sleep. I was kind of right the next day, but you only see those patterns if you start, sort of logging lots of information, how you feel, how you work out, so your energy levels are good. I mean, you can kind of get carried away with it, but if you are looking for every little percentage point, as guys who want to progress quickly are, generally young guys are pretty enthusiastic. You want to sort of dot every T, cross every I, then being that level of sort of systematic approach can help you learn a lot about the way your body functions.
Cool. Darren, over to you, buddy. What's your one piece of advice that you think would benefit a new lifter or something you wish you'd learned earlier on in your lifting?
I was probably going to say something similar along the lines that Mike did, but I think managing volume as well. I remember, like, most people are going to be great in the sport. You should come into it with the mentality of, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to do as much as I can, as long as possible, and I definitely did that coming in. Like, I'd go in, pick every exercise anew for that body part and do 4 sets to absolute failure every single workout, time after time after time after time. And I did know about progressive overload. I was trying to get stronger, but I was trying to get stronger on every single set I did in the gym. So obviously, over the last couple of years, I've gone more to a different approach. I think finding out for yourself how many failure sets you really need in your workout and putting them where they're really needed, like in big, bread and butter compound movements, focusing on getting stronger first. If you've got a good strength base, you're going to be able to build muscle and different rep ranges and stuff later with different tempos and everything. But like, I think most people that get into bodybuilding, especially if they're a beginner with barely any weight training experience, they want to come in, they want to get stronger, and they want to get bigger at the same time. So they're trying to do like a mix of everything, I think, obviously, like I said, now I like to do a top set, back off set on maybe 2 or 3 exercises that I found work well for my body. They don't have to be bench press, squat, and deadlift, but they have to be 3 movements that you can get a good load with and works well with your mechanics, and you're actually using the muscle rather than just moving weight. And then find accessory exercises around that to complete your workout, and that's where you put your intensity sets, your drop sets, your cluster sets, all that sort of stuff in later. When because you want to be focusing on getting stronger on those movements each week. Because if you're getting stronger, especially as a natural athlete, it usually means you're probably putting on some kind of muscle if your nutrition's in line, you know?
Yeah, man. It's an old saying, eh? That the strength comes first and the size follows. I think I heard that saying when I was about 15 years old. So, you know, it still holds true to this day. I suppose I have to come up with a fucking bit of training advice, don't I?
Yeah.
Jeepers.
I'm all ears. I need some help.
Oh, what would I do? Look, I'm going to keep it real simple and make it a real easy takeaway thing because it's just a pet peeve of mine and I see it so often. And it's not just novice bodybuilders. It's not just intermediates. I've seen some very, you know, talented guys that could be even better doing it. Is just don't be sloppy with your reps, you know. And if anything, you know, remember that the negative aspect of the rep, the eccentric movement, is actually the movement that's really going to benefit you. So the fact that you're moving a big weight and just sort of dropping it through the negative phase, you know, it's maybe it looks impressive on Instagram, but to anyone who knows what they're looking at, that all they see is you robbing yourself of the potential benefits of that exercise. So I think it's probably, and I'll quote Kurt for this one, because I actually think his failure of form is quite a good concept to put in place every now and then, just to check that you're not just moving weights for the sake of moving weights. Because at the end of the day, look, we're not CrossFit athletes, we're not strong men, we're playing bodybuilding kids, and the idea is to work the muscle, find the hardest way to make that muscle do the work and get the most benefit from that in terms of hypertrophy. So my take-home message is keep your form tight and focus on the negative. There you go.
Oh, bro, that's a big pet peeve of mine as well. There's three parts to the movement, right? We've got the concentric, which everyone knows, bicep curl. And then even when bicep curls, we're seeing it, drop the weight. You've got the eccentric part and even the isometric there where you can be squeezing and peaking the muscle if you're doing bicep curls, for instance. Get stronger in all three parts of the movement. Then, you know, when you're going up weight, you're going to be in way stronger, more stable and safer positions.
Yeah, absolutely. Eh? And I think, you know, people kind of get quite, like they look at people like Hollingshead and that and the weights that they're moving and go, how come you're not getting injured? And the reason they're not getting injured is they're still moving those weights with really neat form, you know? And yes, they're heavy, but they're still in the 6 to 8 ranges and the form doesn't change. So, you know, I think building that form not only helps you grow quicker, but protects you from a lot of injuries where you stray outside of the natural form for that movement.
Oh, another one that I've been seeing quite a bit at the gym lately. If you're trying to build muscle, just you need to drop your ego. You do not need to be doing one rep maxes every single workout. It's straining on your CNS. You're not going to make any progress. Like you say, they're not lifting the weight with the muscle. If you're doing powerlifting, fine, that's good, you know. But even then, I just see it so much with beginners, like, because, you know, the strength part becomes addictive, you know. You're getting stronger every week. Look at this, and that becomes your thing because usually when you start, you know, your diet's not perfect, your physique's still not looking that great, so you're like, well, strength is my thing at the moment, you know. Honestly, guys, like, people who know what they're looking at are cringing, for one, and you're not good doing yourself any progress. Just, you know, do 6 reps. It's absolute failure if you're going to do that. At least do 8 reps and get stronger in those rep ranges. Your one rep max is going to go much higher than it is doing one rep maxes every single session, you know.
I think I talked about that a while back and said that, and I'm talking strength, that if you're doing that, doing your like one rep max and your fucking 2 rep max every time, all you're doing is really testing yourself. You're not actually setting yourself up to progress. So, you know, you can write that session off as purely a test of what you can do rather than actually taking any real benefit going forward. So.
And I heard they were talking about intensity, remember, on the podcast the other day with Fawad and Matt. And, like, to be honest to me, doing a one rep max, yeah, it's hard. But I know that I'm not looking forward to that set of 20 squats more than I'm not looking forward to picking something up the floor once, you know?
I think
people don't want to do it.
Yeah, I think that intensity thing was purely a conversation around what the the definition of intense was versus something, you know, like, as you say, you know, even like an 8 rep max is fucking a ton harder than a 1 rep max, you know, because it drags itself out and it's just as painful at the end of the day. So,
taking the scientific definition, which Ben Chow was talking about,
yeah,
everybody else, any normal person would say, oh man, that was an intense metaphor. He's not saying it was a 1 rep max.
No.
You know, so that's the way we use that. So it could be a high rep set, a low rep set, but if it's fucking hard, it could be exactly whatever. But when we use the phrase, oh, it was intensity technique, it's to make it harder, you know, make it more exhausting, make it more fibers.
It's the bro definition.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we move on to nutrition, Mike? What would be your one tip that you'd give to guys coming up with nutrition?
Like the systematic side of things sort of underlay everything. So you do the same with your diet, do the same with your training, do the same with kind of everything. Beyond that, I guess the lesson I learned was in the 90s, it was super low fat, as low fat as you get. I got about 4 weeks into my first competition diet and I started getting, you know, cracked lips and my hair got really brittle. I just had like no essential fatty acids. And so I had to start supplementing with MCT oil just to kind of, you know, get enough fat. Now, that's a strategy, but the last couple of times I've dieted, I've gone, actually, it's more about calories in, calories out. My macros are pretty good. The fat's not outrageous, but I was having, you know, like 30 grams of cheese on my omelette up until about 4 weeks out. You know, all right, my condition wasn't what it should be, so maybe I need to do that this time. But, and, you know, ideally you'd be getting it from better fat sources, that sort of thing. But, you know, fat's not the enemy, you know. So I'd... a more balanced approach to both on-season and off-season. Don't be afraid of fat, manipulate carbohydrates.
Darren, do you want to hit us with your words of wisdom about nutrition?
Well, I've been completely honest about this in the past. When I first started bodybuilding, I'd diet Monday to Friday and then pretty much eat till I was sick Saturday and Sunday. And that wasn't me knowing what I was doing. That was just because I couldn't handle it. And, you know, you get up on stage once, and I think the first time you're up there and you're looking at physiques that you probably think you could beat, and you're losing to them because you're too fat. It's I think it takes getting up there to really know what I'm talking about. But once you've felt that feeling, you will never try to come in out of shape again. Like after that first year, I committed. I said, if I'm starting to prep, I'll never once deviate from whatever my coach is telling me to do. I'm paying that person, you know, sometimes ridiculous amounts of money to control what's most important to me in my life. So I'm going to do exactly what they say, because at the end of the day, then I'll know, like, you know, if what worked, what didn't work. We'll have all this information, because you should be checking in with your coach, sending them photos weekly, monitoring your morning weights, you know. Like, I shouldn't even have to talk about this on a bodybuilding podcast, but some people still think that weighing yourself at the end of the day and weighing yourself in the morning are the same thing. I'm like, you need to control as many variables as possible if you want to be the best, because that's what the best are doing. And if you're genetically like lesser, like I think I am, and you need to work twice as hard to get all those things, you know, yeah, you see guys walking around sometimes like shredded all the time, eating whatever they want. And I know some people think that I'm shredded all the time, but trust me, I'm not one of those people. I suffer. I will do absolutely anything that the coach tells me to do to get to the end. And if you've got that mindset, then you will beat a lot of people on stage just for the fact that you're conditioning, because it shows. If you put in all that work and your coach knows what they're doing, you're going to be shredded on stage, and that's going to lift you a couple places just doing that. Like Mike said as well, essential fatty acids, like a lot, losing weight isn't just, or gaining weight isn't just eating more or eating less. Like so many coaches I see, you know, just once they understand macronutrients, they think they can coach people. It's like, you know, digestion is a huge thing, and I'm glad that that's getting a bit more airways these days. Like people are finding out how important it is, like especially with females. Like I've seen some coaches put females on 20 grams of fat for a whole prep so they can eat carbs, so they'll stick to the diet kind of thing, you know, lose their period, end up with skin and hormone problems and all that sort of stuff. And you know, some of these girls, especially doing Kenyan and stuff, they don't know. They see a famous face on that's got like high profile athletes on Instagram. I'm not bringing up anyone in particular, but I'm just saying, like, you know, it's that's how impressionable people can be. So you just really need to know what you're doing in terms of essential fatty acids. You know, things like I like to use macadamia nut oil, avocado for my monounsaturateds, bit of peanut butter, like you say, fish oil, salmon, tuna, you know, for omega-3s, as well as in the red meat and the eggs and all that stuff. Getting a good variety of your fat sources is good as well. And then you can still have saturated fat. It's just getting a good balance, you know. If you do all those things I just said, like get blood work done, I promise you your cholesterol will be more improved. Your bad cholesterol will be down. Your good cholesterol, you know, your balance will be way better. That's one thing I've noticed just by doing that anecdotally with myself and with a lot of clients. Any sorts of those sorts of lipid profile problems come back a lot better. Yeah. And then, yeah, with carbs, it's just, don't be scared of carbs either. I was scared of carbs for a long time. I've done preps for 5 months and no carbs because I thought, hey, I'm a diabetic. If I don't have to eat carbs, I don't have to inject insulin, so I'll store less fat. You know, that's good in theory, but I felt like absolute crap. I probably limited the best years of my growth by not eating carbs. Like it was, you know, and just choosing good carb sources. Like we've talked about the insulin release thing. If you're picking like more low GI carbs, you know, like good rices and potato and kumara and just whole foods in general, pasta, whatever, rather than just going for packet foods and stuff like that, that's a good option. And then protein, clean protein.
Can I just jump and ask you a question there? Are you a proponent of chucking in a quick release and a slow release to get insulin spikes, so you kind of mix your carb sources at the same time? Or
definitely with non-diabetic clients, I'd definitely, especially around training, we'll be using the whole, that whole window to like carbs intra, carbs pre. Obviously I don't want to have fats pre-workout meal. I do have fats pre-workout meal. I don't want to have fats post-workout meal because it'll just slow everything down. You want a quick digesting protein source or whey isolate, white fish I usually like to use, especially in prep. Oh, sorry. Gotcha. Yep. Is that back?
Yeah, mate.
Yeah. So, you know, it's all getting in there and nothing's slowing it down. And then also supplementation, like I said, talking about digestion earlier, psyllium husk, apple cider vinegar, glutamine, digestive enzymes, probiotics, like do some research into that stuff and find out all its benefits, because if you're digesting your food well, if you're not digesting your food well, it doesn't matter how many calories, how many grams of protein you're eating every day, you're not going to be utilizing any of it. And all you're going to end up with is a bloated stomach for most of your off season, feeling like absolute shit. Like I know there is a part of putting on weight that will involve some kind of force feeding. You know, you're going to be uncomfortable at times. But I found this off season, I found out like through trial and error for myself, I found out how many grams of meat can I eat per meal before I get the acid reflux indigestion feeling, and also will it slow me down for my next meal. And I've gone to about 250 gram raw per meal. Like that works well for me. Any more than that, and I really struggle to get the rest of the meal down, especially when I'm at up to 125 grams of carbs per meal at the moment. So, you know, trying to get that much rice with that much chicken, it just it doesn't work for me. Also, not having all my protein sources from meat all day, because if I do that again, I just don't digest it. So I like to go like a shake kind of thing morning and maybe a yogurt at night. And then in the middle of the day, I'll go like, you know, your meat for three meals and then a higher fat maybe for dinner. So salmon or steak or premium mince or something like that. I also have taken, you know, I'm a big breakfast guy. I love breakfast, my favorite meal of the day. But also I found that during the off season, if I keep doing that, I have high fat breakfast, you know, eggs, bacon and salmon, sometimes avocado. So doing that just slows me down too much in the off season. So I have that meal later in the day in the off season, whereas in prep, I'd have it at the start of the day because it would help my appetite. So, you know, like if you're logging everything, like Mike said, with your training, with your nutrition, and or you've got a coach who knows what they're doing and they're tracking all that stuff for you, you just need to know how to interpret that information that you have, because every time you try and gain weight or try and lose weight, if you're sticking to that plan 100%, that's going to give you information about what worked, what didn't work. So moving forward, you can make better decisions about what you're going to do. You know, like no bodybuilder ever nails it. Even if you had that perfect prep with the perfect peak, you try and replicate it the next time and too many variables have changed, you know. But controlling as many of those variables throughout prep, like I said, with the weights and the photos and making sure you're progressive overloading your training, adding food where it's needed and not adding food where it's going to slow you down in terms of digestion or anything like that, and you should be
pick up on a point there. You talked about sticking to your plan, and I think that's probably something worth noting as well. If you've got a, especially if you're using a coach, but even if you've made your own plan, if you don't stick to it, had enough at work, you haven't learned anything. You haven't learned if that plan was effective or aspects of that plan were effective because you just didn't stick to it, so you don't know. So if
you've got to stick
to your plan, that's number one.
That's exactly right. You would be surprised how many like people with good coaches during their preps have messaged me and they're like, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. And I'm like, guys, just even if you talk to your coach about it, if you don't trust what they're telling you to do, okay? Because that's, if they get angry at you, get another coach. Honestly, you're paying them money. They are giving you a service. And if you're into bodybuilding like we are, you're probably very passionate about it. So it's very important to you. You need to be able to communicate openly and freely with that person if you can't find someone else.
Cool. Right. So what I'm taking from that, Mike, from you is, you know, not to be afraid of fats as the enemy. And Darren, basically, nail your diet. Don't be afraid of calories. But don't fall into the old macros type approach, and be consistent and follow through on your plan. That kind of the gist of it.
Pretty much.
Right. I'm going to be real simple because I'm a simple guy. I think my take-home message would probably be, we're talking novices and intermediate guys, it's going to be about the dirty bulk. So someone had to go there. I think there is a time and a place early on in someone's bodybuilding where you've got to do a dirty bulk because you've just got to slam some fucking size on. And I think there's no shame in getting a little bit out of shape to put on a truckload of mass. But once you've reached a reasonable size, to me, the dirty bulk is history, and it was a fond memory of a time you got to do what you wanted to do, because once you've been in the game for a while, you need to stay in a condition that's closer to a show condition, because you can't afford to be dropping, having to drop 20% body fat like my fat ass had to do this year. It's no fun. And you lose too much muscle in the process. So I think there's a place for the dirty bulk early on. And particularly, you know, unless you're a really endomorphic type person, you probably should never even go down that path. But if you're, you know, if you're a meso or a relatively hard gainer, do the dirty bulk, put on some size, and then from there on in start bulking a bit more cleanly.
But can I add to that, that when you do, if you do, when you do your dirty bulk and you get pretty out of shape, make a good plan to come down slowly. So you can try and retain as much of that size you've gained as possible. I mean, I know my last really, really dirty bulk was before Nationals in 99. I've lost 22 kilos in 11 weeks. And I'd love to have that 131 kilos now, because I'm sure I'd come in at least five or seven kilos heavier than I did then.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing too, is, you know, if you're going to put on weight, you need to accept that you're going to have to sit at that weight and get comfortable at that weight for a while before you diet down. Otherwise, easy come, easy go.
Yeah, boys, can I just bring something up I was thinking about before? I forgot to bring up. The other thing is with that all it can takes mentality and stuff, when we get to dieting, like I've done this myself, so that's why I bring it up. All it takes doesn't mean 13 weeks out that you can do 2 hours of cardio every single day, train twice and eat no carbs for three to four months, right? That doesn't prove anything. You know, like I've done it in the past, and you come with this expectation, like, I did so much. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to translate into any kind of success on stage. And like, this is, where do you go from there? You're doing 2 hours of cardio 12 weeks out. You stop losing weight 2 weeks in. And what are you going to do? 3 hours of cardio now. You've got no food to play with because you're eating nothing, just protein and vegetables every meal. But there's still, some people say that's what you got to do. You know, like I'd see it even internationally with pro bodybuilders are still doing this sort of thing. It's like, you need to be consistent in the off season, eating the same kind of food, so that when you start prep, all you need to do is reduce the amounts of those foods and you can lose weight. Up, like, yes, maybe you will have to carb cycle or do lower carb days and blah, blah, blah later in prep. But, you know, if you've done things right in the off season, when you get to that point, it's only small changes, you know, like just say in the off season, I was eating my breakfast was 4 pieces of toast, 4 eggs, and a glass of orange juice. Taking that glass of orange juice is taking 120 calories away. And I'm not even going to remember that I was having that orange juice. I'm probably having a sugar-free Fanta with it now or something. So it's like, you've just got to make small changes and stick it out. You can't, there's no rushing the process of losing weight. If you do, you're going to end up stringy and, you know, it's not, you're not going to look good. And most of your prep, you're going to be flat. So you're not going to even think you look good until the day after, the week after the show where you're pigged out and you're like, yeah, this is what I should have looked like, blah, blah, blah.
A real interesting kind of thought popped into my head then, and you know, most bodybuilders are pretty good. You know, we've got some that are fucking fantastic when it comes to prep and they just do everything right. And the majority of people do most things right. You know, they do pretty well during prep. But in the off season, I think the difference between, you know, some of our guys that go, and guys and girls that go a lot further, is they have that same level of dedication and focus in the off season. Sure, they may have, you know, programmed cheat meals more regularly or a free meal here and there, but they're consistently eating the same thing. They don't go from having a prep to just eating what they feel like at the time and whatever's in the fridge type approach, which I think a lot of people would still doing, and that's the probably quite a critical thing year on year progress.
Just to push back on that a little bit though, is making sure that you've got either all your ancillaries right, or you've got a variety and a good enough variety of food and you're not missing something, because I've been doing that for the last, you know, year or so. Same foods, it's just changing the amounts. Every meal is different, but it's pretty much the same. If I'm missing a micronutrient, if I'm missing something, I've been missing it for a year. So, I've just been away on holiday, and that, so I mean, I have had a bit of variation just recently. But if you are consistently eating exactly the same things, you've got to make sure that you've got that diet pretty well dialed in with everything your body needs.
Yeah, variety is definitely key. I've done the preps where you just go protein and vegetables, and then afterwards, you know, going into that off season, I had terrible digestion problems, like aching pains where I felt like I couldn't even sit, and it was all because when I'd introduced new food, my body didn't know how to digest it anymore.
Cool. I guess that's probably enough tips for today. We could go into other things, and at some stage we probably will, but it was novices and intermediates, so you know, some good ideas there. Hopefully people can take some stuff away from that. But before we go, really wanted to have a chat to you and see where you're at, Darren, and what the plans are going forward for 2021, if you've got anything on your calendar at the moment.
So, like I said, after Tournament Champions, I had a couple months off just to give my body a break, off supplements and everything as well. You know, got blood work done, make sure everything was all good. Was meant to have a surgery on an abscess I had, but kind of went away by itself with the antibiotics, and it just kept getting moved, and with the COVID stuff, and I just like ended up getting rid of that because it was creating too much doubt in my mind about like when I could start my off season. So I was just like, well, you know, I'm good to go, we'll start now. So I started in January. Finally my weight started coming up. Like even after the show, I was eating like shit for like a month, and my weight would just keep dropping every morning if I tried to eat diet food. So that happened for ages, and then finally got back into the 90s and I started to feel good, and then so I started my off season there. Just been training with Daryl every day, which has been awesome. Introducing him to the top set, back off set kind of stuff. He was used to doing a lot of volume with bugger all rest, and I trained with him once during prep. I was like, bro, how do you do that? So that's been good. So hopefully if my body plays ball, I want to do the Wellington Classic Pro Qualifier show, because obviously
what's the date on that one, man?
I think it's the 11th of August, maybe.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah, so I think so. I've got probably another 10 weeks to go. I've got up my weight, morning weight's about 107 at the moment, which is pretty good. Like I don't think I've ever been this lean, this big before. But like it's, you know, my back's definitely come up a bit, but like it's the things around the injuries that I needed to bring up. Like I haven't been able to train my arms for 3 months now because of the whatever's going on in there, which has been kind of frustrating because they stuck. I'm back training, legs getting good. They're improving again after my hamstring thing. constrained back pretty much full capacity. Shoulders are growing. So, yeah, it's been going good. So, probably start prep, get myself, I don't know yet, like probably 15 weeks prep. But, yep. Like, when I'm there, I struggle to keep myself there. Like, it happens every time, and I end up, there's a stage where I go backwards and I don't see it happening because I just see me getting leaner and think that's awesome. So I don't know if the plan this time will be, if I get there, we're just going to act like there was no show and just start increasing calories, you know, to like you would if you're just trying to build my metabolism. So hold the same conditioning and eat more food. Like last year we did that into Wellington, it worked really well. And then going into Palmy, because my weight just kept dropping and dropping and dropping, you know, after a show, how your metabolism decides it just wants to go 1,000 miles a second.
Does anyone have an explanation for that? Like, I mean, I know there's certain things that we're doing that ramp our metabolism up and all the rest of it, but it just seems to get on a roll. And I mean, even doing a recomp when you're coming down, it's fucking slow and slow, and then suddenly it starts happening, and then you go, right, okay, it's time to start bulking. And I'm kind of watching my scales, and the scales are going nowhere, or they're dropping down slightly and creeping up 200 grams a week. And I'm like, what the fuck's going on here?
Post-show for me, I reckon it's honestly coming off everything. My body's like, it just feels good. And like my training gets better, my sleep gets better, everything gets better. But like it's never showing anything in blood work to be like, well, my body's feeling any different. So it's probably just psychological. I don't know.
It's a weird one though, eh? Because everyone talks about it. Everyone just says like, yeah, you talk to Anthony about it and he goes, I'm throwing so many calories in and I'm just not even touching the sides, you know?
Anthony's a perfect example. Like pure consistency, week in, week out. And that's why, look at the amount of progress he's made. Have you seen his 2016 photos? Like, and the reason, he's not got the best genetics. He knows that, but he works hard, man. Like, does the same shit day in, day out because he loves this. And that's like, if you really want to be the best, like, who's going to say that he's not going to win a pro card? It's like, yeah, he didn't win it this year, last year, he didn't win it the year before, but he's going to win it. And everyone knows that just because no one else has got the mental capacity to show up time and time and time like that after improving every year, you know?
It's kind of a weird sport, you know, like when you look at it, you know, I guess with bodybuilding per se, the bodybuilding classes, you don't actually have to have the best shape naturally because you can still win on muscle mass and conditioning. And muscle mass and conditioning are two things that you control with discipline and hard work and year after year after year. Your shape is what your shape is, and you got born with that. And it really, you can do a little bit to change it, but you kind of got what you got. Whereas if you were a female competitor in some of their classes, perhaps like in the board shorts, and possibly more so even in classic, you kind of need that genetic shape to do well in those classes. Whereas in bodybuilding, hard work will pull you through and sort of overcome, well, two out of the three categories that your genetics don't cover.
We would talk about, set performance and process goals rather than outcome goals.
Yeah.
Because if Anthony goes, oh, I've got to win my pro card, otherwise I'm a failure.
Yeah.
Well, he'd give up after the first try, wouldn't he? Because he didn't win it. But instead, he's just, you know, sticking to that process, sticking to that plan, and he's improving all the time. Because what are we all trying to do? Trying to create the best version of ourselves that we can. And
another good example is Dan Fawkes. I mean, he's an example of good genetics with the work ethic. I pretty much watched most of his first shows because he was in Wanganui and I'm in Palmy, when he was doing Nabba and stuff. And, you know, you'd always look at him and you'd, before I started bodybuilding, I'd look at him and go, that's the kind of guy I'd want to look like, even though, you know, I'm much taller than him, he's short, but it's just like, you can see that. Then when he teed up with a great coach, you know, Kurt's awesome. And look at the amount of progress he's just made by doing bodybuilding, pretty much only bodybuilding in the last 2 years. He got his pro card. And like the amount of muscle he's put on when I saw him at Nationals, like I saw him the year before and thought, wow, but that was crazy. It was thick and dense, and it's just inspiring, that sort of stuff, you know, seeing them coming up and seeing the love they have for the sport translate into success, into maybe a professional career. Like, it's just, I think, you know, that sort of stuff's so inspiring. And if you look at people like that and realize, hey, it's not all whatever you say it is about bodybuilders, look at the best of the best in any sport. They're doing all these things like the X's and O's, the boring stuff that nobody wants to do, the stuff that most people say, I don't have time to do that, or whatever excuse came up in way of it. Like the best of the best in anything in the world, get that shit done anyway.
I think right. That's what I do, but I also think that your average aspiring bodybuilder probably works harder than your average aspiring athlete in most other sports. So, we train and diet, not quite as hard as a pro, but we work pretty hard. Whereas a lot of your amateur sports people are just looking at beers on the weekend. And
yeah, exactly, man. And like I said, I tried to play cricket to a high level before I was bodybuilding. And if I had any sort of the knowledge that I had about training and nutrition and supplementation and looking after your body that I had now back then, I think I would have been much better of a sportsman. And so I think even if you are just a sportsman listening to this, if you want to be a professional sports person in anything, you're going to have to you have to live it 24/7, no matter what it is.
Hey, so there's a fucking great message right there. If you want a career as a bodybuilder, or you want to be a pro bodybuilder, or you just want to look like a fucking monster, start fucking acting like one and live that lifestyle. Because, those are the habits and the disciplines that will actually get you there rather than wishing and dreaming and pissing into the wind. So great point there, bro. I think we'll end on that because that was a great point for newbies out there. Take it for what it's worth, guys. I'm sure those that take it on board might look back in a couple of years and go, that was the best advice I ever had. So well done, Darren. Words of wisdom. For everyone out there, it's been a while, but we've got a couple of really cool interviews coming up. Trying to get on board a couple of the Aussie boys, just organizing some time, and we've got a couple bodybuilding couple, so we'll get to talk to a couple that do it. So interesting times, and we will see you next week again. Thank you, Darren, and people out there, take care as always.
Cheers, bye. Cheers.